This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I am your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for joining to listen in. Lots of good things to come. We'll be speaking with Bread for the World about the issue of world hunger. We'll have an unusual opportunity to speak with a world-class musician, Zakir Hussain, who's coming to Ames in April to perform. And Allison Walters here. Stay tuned. Bread for the World is a national, bipartisan Christian organization dedicated to the eradication of hunger. The organization, according to their website, stands in the biblical tradition of those who speak out boldly in defense of people who are poor and hungry. Roy Haugen, Jan Barron, and Glenda Egling belong to the Ames chapter of Bread for the World, and they have come here to explain. Roy Haugen.
Bread, as we often just call it, has been working to address local and global root causes of hunger for over 30 years. Bread for the World was founded in 1974, financed through private, non-government contributions. Lots of progress has been made in reducing hunger over these years, and Bread has been a part of this success. Their current president of Bread for the World is the Reverend David Beckman. He worked for 15 years for the World Bank before becoming president of Bread, so he has a wide knowledge of the world situation. And David Beckman was awarded the World Food Prize in 2010. Bread has been effective. We are a collective Christian voice urging our nation's decision makers to end hunger and poverty at home and abroad. Bread also has two affiliates. The Bread for the World Institute provides policy analysis on hunger and on strategies to end it, and the Alliance to End Hunger engages other faith communities, as well as charities, universities, and corporations, to work to end hunger at home and abroad.
What is the main strategy of Bread for the World?
Only government leaders can make the economic, social, and political decisions to eliminate widespread hunger and poverty. The government must play a role. Providing direct food assistance to hungry and low-income families is vital. We do it all the time through food pantries, meal programs, global food relief, and so forth. But churches and charities cannot do it by themselves. So, as people of faith, we advocate. That is, we remind and encourage, and I guess you can say we lobby, our congressional leaders that they have a responsibility to represent all people and come up with solutions to end poverty and hunger here in the United States and around the world. How do we advocate? How do we speak up on behalf of those who often do not have a voice in decisions that affect them? Glenda and Jan are going to share some of the ways in which Bread does this and why it is so important.
I'm Jan Barron, and Roy, you asked a question, how do we advocate? That's a big word, but it's really a simple thing. We contact our lawmakers in Washington, D.C. and in Des Moines. Right now, we are contacting our lawmakers who are working on the big agriculture law for the next few years. For many years, that budget, the Ag Bill, has included money for food stamps. They're not officially called that anymore. The acronym is SNAP. It stands for Supplemental Food Assistance Program. So we are writing to our lawmakers, Senator Grassley and Senator Ernst and Congressman King, asking them to make sure money is included in the budget for SNAP and also the Women and Infant Children Program called WIC.
My name is Glenda Egerling, and I've been a volunteer for Bread for quite a number of years by now. In 2015, 12.7% of American households, that's 42.2 million people, were food insecure at some point during the year, meaning they didn't know how they would provide for their next meal or it would not be nutritionally adequate. Information about hunger in Iowa from the Food Bank of Iowa shows that 1 in 8 Iowans are food insecure, and 1 out of 5 children doesn't have enough to eat. Hunger and poverty hit children hardest. Children's growth and education are affected for the rest of their lives. according to the Census Bureau in 2016. 384,830 Iowans live at or below the poverty level of $24,300 for a family of four. That's hard statistics for me to go to bed on at night.
Writing to our lawmakers about ending hunger in our country does have an impact. That may surprise you. We elect our officials in a democratic way when we vote, but we also have a responsibility to let them know what we think they should be doing. You might think that it's scary or you don't know enough to do that. It doesn't have to be fancy, and we don't have to worry about our lawmakers getting back at us. If you are concerned about people being hungry, just write that in an email or a handwritten letter. It can be simple and straightforward. Last year, 600,000 people sent an offering of letters or letters to our lawmakers asking them to include money in the ag bill for SNAP. When our Congress people hear from so many people, that influences them. Other countries also contribute to lessening food hunger. It's not just the USA.
In 2015, a set of goals was established by an international community of 193 nations, including the United States. They pledged to end hunger and poverty by the year 2030. Though there is a trend toward greater food fragility due to global conflict and climate change, we believe that ending hunger by 2030 is a sustainable goal that can be accomplished. We believe that with governments, the private sector, and individuals around the world, including those who live in hunger and poverty, partnering together, ending hunger is a sustainable goal that can be accomplished.
So all of us together are working on the United Nations sustainable goal, and that is to eliminate hunger by 2030, and it is moving forward.
Jan, do I understand correctly that currently the way that you see to implement this goal is to make sure that SNAP is included?
Yes, money for the ag bill, for food stamps, SNAP, and there are a couple other things like earned income tax credit, which really helps working poor families. The fact is, as Glenda's pointed out, many people who are working aren't paid enough to get by. And currently, 47% of the people who are receiving SNAP are employed. The others who receive some help are elderly people, people who are disabled, and of course, children. And we might add that this helps Iowa farmers too, because the ag bill and helping food aid internationally as well as locally benefits the farmers who are producing it. They have markets or ways to earn their income.
Are you concerned that this might not happen, or does it seem like a relatively routine part of the bill?
I would say it's not certain. This funding for SNAP comes from Congress, and money for food stamps or SNAP is being included, but we need to see the full appropriation included.
Right.
Currently, in the proposed federal budget, I believe there is a 21% reduction in agriculture. And so that is really concerning to us.
I think our biggest concern is what's happening in the federal budget. The states don't have much control over the SNAP program. At this point, it's really part of the federal bill.
So you're asking people to contact their federal representatives?
Yes. Exactly.
The representatives and senators?
Right.
Yes, yes.
Members
right.
of Congress.
Yeah. All members of Congress
yeah.
on the
and
federal level.
Yeah, most food programs, or many of them, are through the Department of Agriculture mm-hmm. rather than some of the other departments.
In addition to the SNAP program, there's also women, infants, and children. Mm-hmm. That's another important program because it feeds infants and children. And school food programs are included.
And summer, Story County has been part of receiving money to help children during the summer when they're not at school and have school lunches. So it's
and
really important.
They're receiving federal money?
Yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The women and infant and children is part of the ag bill. And also SNAP and a few other things, like the summer enrichment program that mm-hmm. has meals is also part of that.
I just want to say one more thing. I know there's a lot of concern across the United States about security. And I know in this new budget, apparently there's quite a bit of money that's going toward the military and toward security. But one of the statistics that came out of Bread's research is in post-conflict countries where high levels of hunger are not addressed, those countries are 40% more likely to relapse into conflict within a 10-year lifespan. So this is a good reason, and it helps make our country more secure in the world. If we try to remove hunger, it has security implications.
Mm-hmm. What is the timing on the bill?
They're working on it right now.
Yes.
I think it has another year to go before it comes into effect.
And is it possible to stay updated on where they're at with these things? Is this information that's available to the public?
Generally, you can get it on the Internet.
And if you write to your congressman, can you ask them to tell you where they're at with it?
Yes.
You can, and they're good at responding.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're boilerplate letters because they get so many requests, but they usually have some kind of a request and a response. They need to hear from us, even if they don't agree with us.
We'll repeat this at the end, but why don't you tell us how one actually does this?
We very much encourage you to participate in something we call offering of letters, to contact your members of Congress by letter or email. To learn more about the offering of letters, go to www.bread.org and click on the offering of letters heading. There you will be able to find a toolkit of information to download or order free of charge about how to organize an offering of letters for your faith community or as a service project for your organization.
Could you repeat the website, please?
www.bread.org. You will see a heading called Offering of Letters, and you can click on that. But you will also find information on the various bills and how they're coming through Congress, too. Let Congress know that you want the domestic food nutrition program saved, at least at the same level as last year, and the international food development programs as well. Bread's website will be helpful to you in stating this. An offering of letters can be done at any time, but in early June, Bread is holding a lobby day in Washington, D.C., where letters from some faith communities will be personally delivered to our members of Congress. Another way of getting help to organize your offering of letters is to talk to one of our local volunteers who has been through an offering of letters many times and can give you excellent advice. And actually, there's nothing better than talking about offering of letters and breads. His name is Russell Milby, a retired Lutheran pastor in Ames, and his phone number is 515-233-4830. So after you go to the Bread website, read all about offering of letters and contacting your congressman. If you still feel like you need more help, call Russ. The number is 515-233-4830. And the last thing that I want to say is we welcome having you join us for a meeting. Our regular meetings are on the third Monday of the month at 4:30 in the Library of Bethesda Lutheran Church on Northwestern Avenue in Ames. Our next meeting in April will take place a little irregularly due to Easter. It will be April 24th, the fourth Monday, at 4:30 in Bethesda Lutheran Church. And we would love to have you join us.
It's not a huge group, but it's friendly and well-informed and well-aware group. So we really encourage people to be part of it. We have a good time. We don't all agree always. We come from different political positions, but it's good to come together around the concern for need for food. A major reason why we are happy to be part of the group Bread for the World is because we can be informed and learn about some of the things that we have shared this morning. Sometimes people have erroneous impressions of people who get food stamps, that they can use it for beer or cigarettes or what else, some other unessentials, but that is not true. And the people I know who have had or have food stamps have to be really careful with their food. And it's not a large amount. I mean, I've heard of people who get something like $26 a month or $140 a month.
People come more at the end of the month when the food stamps or SNAP program runs out, but they're there because they need it. One interesting illustration in terms of the importance of the government support is that if there's 20 sacks of groceries, only one of those sacks is supplied by charities, such as food pantries and other kinds of giving, and 19 of those sacks are provided by government programs. And so that really shows the importance of our government support for food programs. Our goal, of course, is to get beyond that, to get at the root causes of hunger. But in the meantime, we do have a responsibility, we feel, to provide some nutritious food for people.
I think Roy and Pat have tried living on a budget as if you were earning a wage of, what was it, $7.25 an hour?
Yeah, we tried it 1 week.
How'd it go?
Well, we made it, but it was a little skimpy. And we had to be really careful when we went shopping. We took our shopping list with us, and, you know, it's not easy. And we don't have children at home anymore.
And you probably don't drink as much milk or eat as much food as a 15-year-old boy.
That's true.
What brought you personally to this issue?
We were brought personally to this because we volunteer for a food pantry and Food at First, and we also have a giving program at our church where we distribute diapers and toilet paper, and we have lived in other countries and know there is a real need for food as well as here in our own country.
I have 4 grandchildren, and one day I sat down and I read the Tribune, and I saw an article on the fact that 1 in 4 children in Ames went to bed hungry at night. And I thought about my 4 grandchildren, and I thought how it would just kill me if one of them had to go to bed hungry at night. But I didn't know what to do about it. I bet you it wasn't more than a week later that I happened to see in our church bulletin that Roy and his wife, Pat Haugen, were having a meeting to talk about Bread for the World, which advocates against hunger. And I just felt like, my gosh, that's the answer to my prayer.
Do you feel that it has helped you come to terms with it?
Oh, of course. You know, the thing I like about being a member of Bread for the World, I mean, some people say, well, you write a letter to your congressman, and what good does it do? You're only one person. Bread for the World has thousands of people across the United States who are writing to their congressman. So it's not just my one letter. It's all these other people. I'm working together with a whole bunch of people, and that really matters.
Thank you so much.
Well,
thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg, and Madhu Gadia is with me. She is the president of the India Cultural Association. Madhu, tell us about the India Cultural Association.
The India Cultural Association is the nonprofit organization. It started in Ames 25 years ago by a few of us, and we bring in a variety of programs, 2 to 3 a year, to foster the culture of India amongst ourselves as well as share it with all the community.
Well, there's a lot to enjoy.
Lots to enjoy. Yes. We are very fortunate. We've had nationally and internationally acclaimed artists that have come.
Tell us what's happening.
This year on April 9th, we are having Zakir Hussain, who is a percussion maestro, so to speak.
You called him a maestro. He's really a virtuoso player, right?
Yes.
He's one of the most prominent tabla musicians.
He's one of the most prominent tabla musicians in India and actually around the world.
It's an honor that he's coming here.
We are very lucky to have him. Mm-hmm. We are fortunate that AIMS as a community, India Cultural Association as an association, can have him come to AIMS. Mm-hmm. So,
is he touring the United States?
He's touring. He's going to be in about 10 to 13. Places, but he's going to be like in D.C. Kennedy Center. He's going to be in Minneapolis, Wisconsin, Chicago, Cleveland, and then Ames, Iowa.
Ames, Iowa.
Pretty cool. And he is going to be here with Rahul Sharma, who is on Santur. Santur is an instrument that has 100 strings. And to tell you the truth, this will be my first time to hear Santur myself. So it's going to be beautiful.
Where are they performing?
We're going to be having the concert at Ames High School Auditorium on April 9th at 4:30 p.m. And it's about 2.5 to 3 mm-hmm. hours. I mean, including the intermission. The tickets for the concert are available at Riemann Music in Ames and Des Moines and Octagon Center in Ames. And, of course, you can call us at 515-451-4706 and talk to Amita. Also, go to ICAIowa.org, and you can get all the information there. ICAIowa.org.
ICAIowa.org.
The phone number is Amita, and her number is 515-451-4706. It's April 9th at 4:30 p.m.
We're fortunate that he's able to speak with us by phone.
Yes, yes. We are very lucky that he's going to be part of the interview.
Do you know him?
No. Oh, my gosh. That would be amazing. He was in Ames about 15 years ago, and it was a sold-out concert. We're just so happy to have him back again.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, let's see if we can get him on the phone.
Yes, let's do that.
All right. Hello, can you hear us?
Yes, Ursula.
Hi, Mr. Zakir Hussain. This is Madhu Gadia. I'm the president of the association, so I'm hanging out with Ursula today.
Oh, I'm very happy and really excited about coming out there.
Is your tour starting here, right?
Yes, that's you are our guinea pig.
Yeah, we are lucky to be your guinea pigs, is all I can say.
I mean, normally the tours begin in major cities. L.A. or something, and to start in Ames, Iowa. And then my daughter, Isabella, is choreographing one of my most favorite musical called Music Man. It's in Iowa.
Oh, what? Really?
I like the songs, the ones in the train, and the one he sings about trouble in River City. So Iowa has always stuck in my mind. And
how did you end up coming to Ames first?
Iowa was one of the first who put their hands up and say, we'd like you to come. And so that's where the first date was set. And then the rest of the tour was built around our first concert.
We're speaking with Zakir Hussain, world-renowned classical tabla virtuoso, as well as one of the chief architects and leaders of the contemporary world music scene, who collaborates with many great artists throughout the world.
Thank you, Ursula, for having me on your show. And it's great to be talking to the people of Ames, Iowa, and I look forward to coming to the concert hall and share our stuff. I mean, this kind of music is never preconceived or planned. It is a spontaneous form of music, so it relies so much on the audience's reaction to it, and the more you react. And so it's a kind of music that happens right there and then with the audience and the artist's participation, and then it's finished. So it's more like an intimate sharing of one's musical tastes and feelings and emotions of that time. It's more like a special personal experience for the audience and the artists of that time. So we will play in Ames, Iowa, and we will not play that way again in all change as we move along, is depending on the audience's reaction in those particular cities. So that's an exciting part of the music. Unlike Western classical music, where you're supposed to sit straight and quiet until it's done, and here you're supposed to chime in a bravo every now and then, and that allows for the music to blossom and a conversation, not just between the artist, but the artist and the audience as well.
Is the music improvised?
That's right.
The tabla, the instrument that you're so well known for, can you describe the instrument to us?
Tabla is a two-piece drum, a high end and a low end, as most percussion instruments are in the world, except for like the snare drum. But what tabla does, it incorporates all those frequencies and tonal variations into just two drums. And what's great about it is that the high-pitched drum, which has a very sustained resonance, can be tuned to the tonal root note of the instrument that it's accompanying. So it has a pitch, and whether it's a D or an E or a C or whatever, so that pitch is there, while the low drum can actually play a whole major scale on it, for instance, from middle C to high C. So it allows it to function not just as a timekeeper, but also as somewhat like a bass, which in many ways complements the melodic patterns that the instrument it's accompanying is playing. So it makes it a very unique percussion instrument that can be a rhythm instrument as well as a melodic instrument at the same time. And it's a very young instrument. It's only 300 years old.
Where does it come from?
It comes from India, and it was developed as an accompanying instrument for recently invented instruments like sitar, but it did not really gain notoriety and popularity until maybe about 200 years ago, and since then has been acknowledged and accepted as the premier rhythm instrument of northern India, and is used for all classical performances and the classical repertoire of the rhythm that has existed for 2,000 years has been transposed onto the tabla, and so now it represents that repertoire that has existed for two millennium.
Retroactively connected to Indian music that predates the tabla itself.
Yes, it actually does. And what's interesting about tabla is it also uses all 10 fingers of the hands, playing it like a piano. So it allows for a very refined technique to import on it any kind of rhythmic idea or rhythmic pattern in a melodic form as well, whether it's a Latin jazz drumming or a Afro-Cuban drumming or Middle Eastern drumming or anything. It can all be transposed onto the tabla because of its technique. And so therefore, it lends itself to not just being a great accompanying instrument, but also a great transitional drum between genres of music. And that's one of the reasons why tabla has been an instrument of choice as far as rhythm instruments are concerned for great jazz musicians or pop musicians or hip-hoppers and so on.
Is tabla also the instrument that's heard in connection with Kathak dancing?
Absolutely. And in that way, it also expresses its ability to be expressive. The rhythm patterns that we play on the tabla can be recited and can mm-hmm. be spoken like a language.
And it's lots of fun.
Yeah. If I talk to you in that language, I can say, Ursula, dagina din, dagina dagata dikatan. It's got a tonal arrangement that's so close to scatting, but at the same time, each tone has a place on the drum. Where were you? So if I would say it that way, I would play it that way.
So it's a storytelling instrument, but also, yeah, from what I hear, it's also a instrument of conversation.
Yes, it is. In many ways, it becomes a voice.
It speaks.
You know the jazz pianist named Keith Jarrett?
Mm-hmm.
And he was in one interview asked, if you weren't playing a piano, what other instrument would you play? And he said, I would play the tabla. And they said, why? And he said, because it's one of the most complete instruments that I know of. We'll be right back.
We're speaking with Zakir Hussain, who is a world-renowned classical tabla virtuoso player, coming to Ames together with another musician who's playing the santur.
What's interesting about the santur is that, first of all, it's an instrument that has almost 100 strings as a hammered dulcimer, so it's all got to be tuned and played, and it belongs to the piano family because each bridge has at least 3 strings on it, just like the piano has 2 or 3 on each one of his keys. So like the key striking the strings in the piano, that is a hammer, like a hammer dulcimer that strikes the string on a particular bridge and creates the tone. So just like the tabla, it's actually not only playing melodically, but playing rhythmically, just like the piano would. It has a very interesting quality and ability to be able to not only play the melodic ragas as written and prescribed over thousands of years, but also lend an interesting suggestion of harmonics to it, which is a much more of a Western idea. And so you hear Indian classical music on the santur, but you can also have kind of an audio or a visual view of what a particular note hit on a santur suggests harmonically, what the other note should be and can be. And so you get more of a modal experience, which is the Indian classical music experience, with a shade of harmony and counterpoint experience, which is a Western classical instrument. With instrument players or singers, my role is to be like a jazz drummer, keeping the time and making sure that the form of the song is maintained and the hits are in the right place and the chord progression is defined by the downbeat and so on. So that's what I'm supposed to do. So I'm accompanying him, but at the same time, we are both able to highlight our abilities as rhythm players and melody players. So in that sense, my tabla playing becomes much more pronounced and on an equal footing with a santur than it would with a sitar or a flute.
It's a conversation between the two instruments, the stringed instrument and the drum.
Like jazz, where you have a song, each instrument will take solo and bring it back. That's the additional element of the Indian classical music. It's a conversation with spontaneous input from both of us.
The music that you'll be performing here in Ames, how would you describe it?
Definitely traditional. The ragas will be chosen for the day, and the treatment of the raga and rhythm cycles will be as prescribed in the tradition. But somewhere along the line, Rahul being a younger musician, therefore being inspired by so many other elements in the world, musically speaking, will probably also inject some elements of where the Indian music is today and where it's going. And so you will hear ragas traditionally and then more of a semi-classical and folkish element that would focus on what I described as the melodic, harmonic, rhythmic expansion of the traditional elements of the Indian music.
Zakir Hussain and Rahul Sharma virtuoso musicians who will be coming to perform in Ames.
April 9th at the Ames High School Auditorium at 4:30 p.m., which is a Sunday.
I'm Ursula Rudenberg for Local Talk, and I am here with Madhu Gadia, president of the India Cultural Association, and we're speaking with Zakir Hussain himself.
Just listening to you, I think I'm going to listen to this concert in a very different way. This gives a lot of history and information about how tabla communicates with the people and the audience. So this is super helpful. And of course, Central Iowa, as well as the surrounding area, has a unique opportunity to come and listen to you on April 9th right here in Ames.
Well, I most certainly aim to be there.
Yes, you are going to be there, that's for sure. Again, this is such a unique opportunity for the audience to come and to listen to Zakir Hussain and Rahul Sharma. So we hope to see the hall full and everybody there.
Me too.
Mr. Hussain, can we speak for a few minutes just about who you and Mr. Sharma are?
Rahul Sharma is the son of probably the greatest santoor maestro of Indian music, Pandit Shiv Kumar Sharma.
His father really introduced the instrument.
Yeah, the santoor comes from the valley of Kashmir, where this was played as folk instrument. And then Pandit Shiv Kumar Sharma adopted it, made some changes so that it could then represent Indian classical music, and then spent most of his life convincing the fraternity of Indian music that this instrument has the ability to be the face of Indian classical music. And it's a great achievement that in his lifetime he has accomplished that. And santoor has become one of the principal instruments of choice in India on which Indian classical music is played. Now, santoor, I have to say, is a new addition to the Indian classical music. What's great is usually something happens and then somebody comes along behind and either follows it up or and doesn't, and it has a danger of just falling off the side and dying. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, Rahul Sharma is equally talented and a young genius who has devoted his life to being able to further the cause of this instrument and consolidate its standing as one of the principal Indian traditional instrument. And so in that sense, it's very commendable that as a young man, just going the way of modern Bollywood or something, he has focused on being a traditional artist and has excelled at it and has now universally recognized in India as the next great santoor maestro. Me, myself, I'm a son of a great tabla player, one of the greatest, as they say in India. I shouldn't be blowing his horn, I'm his son. But Ala Raka is a tabla player who you see as the bandmate of Ravi Shankar. They traveled for 30 years or so all over the world, played at the Woodstock Festival, played at Monterey Pop. My father made the first fusion drum album when he and Buddy Rich, the great jazz drummer, made an album together in the 60s. So he was the greatest tabla player of our time, and I happened to be his student from the age of 3 or 4, an honor, you know, one of the great blessings of my life. So I represent what he has brought forth as far as tabla is concerned. Tabla was an unknown commodity. It was an Indian instrument, but not having an identity worldwide. Because of Ala Raka traveling all over the world with Ravi Shankar, tabla became a known instrument.
It's hard today to imagine that it was once unknown because it's become so identified.
Yes, it has.
With the sound of India.
And Ravi Shankar and Ala Raka have to be given the credit. Ravi Shankar, I must say, used to make it a point that during their concerts, he would allot 15, 20 minutes in the show to just let my father have a solo moment with the audience. And he would put his sitar down and let my father play for about 15 and 20 minutes because he wanted the audience to hear that instrument.
And he was introducing it to the world.
Yeah, and allowed for a lot of people like Elvin Jones or Buddy Rich or Max Roach or Tony Williams and later on Mickey Hart, you know, of the Grateful Dead, becoming people who collaborated with him, learned from him. It allowed for people like me to travel the world and be accepted as percussionists of note representing Indian classical music. So, yes, we do both represent a particular lineage and are proud of our connection with that.
And you yourself are the recipient of multiple awards. It would take much too long to list all of them.
But to name a few, you're the recipient of the prestigious National Endowment for the Arts Heritage Fellowship,
yeah,
and more recently, the Lifetime Achievement Award at the San Francisco Jazz Gala in 2017. Both you and Mr. Sharma have also really played a leadership role in world music. Can you talk a little bit about how new awareness was created through this?
I have to say that you have to have a catalyst and somebody who legitimizes this stuff. For example, Ravi Shankar would not be the majestic Ravi Shankar personality of Indian classical music all over the world if George Harrison would not have found him. I would not have had the chance to work intimately with some of the greatest jazz musicians if John McLaughlin, the great jazz guitarist, would not have picked me up as a young tabla player, and we created a band together in the 70s and ended up connecting with people like Miles or Chick Corea and so many other great jazz musicians. Pandit Shiv Kumar Sharma, Rahul's father, would not have been able to do this if he had not had the platform of Bollywood film industry, where he became one of the great instrumentalists as far as the for Indian background score for Indian music was Indian films was concerned. I did not become a national face of tabla until I started doing ads for tea. And suddenly people started recognizing me. Oh, that was the guy who did the Taj Tea ad. And my face on the billboards and on the buses and whatnot. And so all those things help. They are a catalyst. So what I'm trying to get at is that there was the need in 1960s and 70s by the musicians of this part of the world to expand their knowledge, to look outwards, to see how else they can learn and become better. Because what is an artist? An artist is not a master. An artist is a student. You are a student expanding the knowledge and reinventing yourself day in and day out. When you're born, and you are a student till you die. And George Harrison, as great as he was, a multi-million seller of records, his quest was to get better and better. And so he went out and looked for somebody who could help him do that. John Coltrane found Ravi Shankar when he figured out that he wanted to learn modal music and see how improv can work in that manner. Bela Fleck and Edgar Meyer found me when they wanted to know a little bit about Indian music and how it can help them expand their idea of improvising. And we are all students. That quest to become better and better at what we do helps us to go find things. And that's exactly what happened with Indian musicians. The great names, the great faces, and the great musicians and geniuses of the world found us and therefore brought us to the place where we could interact.
A beautiful description of world music and the growth that it brings through the artist's point of view. How do you think world music has affected the world?
Well, it has put another idea on the table, and that is that it is possible to interact and converse and have respect of a race or of people through their art and culture. A third world country is a third world country if you look at it from a business point of view, from an investment point of view, from making profit point of view. But when you look deeply into their culture and you see the kind of tradition they represent, be it Ethiopia or Somalia or India or any other country, and then you see that they have thousands of years of culture, music and tradition, the respect is different. So I believe that music and culture and art has laid on the table the possibility of looking at the world not through just the economic ability of a country, but through the kind of culture and tradition that they represent and the kind of respect that that demands.
Again, this is such a great opportunity for people, I'd say within 200 miles of Ames, to come and listen to this very unique opportunity to listen to Zakir Hussain on tabla, Rahul Sharma on santur, and if nothing else, interest and curiosity should bring all of you to this concert on April 9th.
And I would like to wish all the listeners of the radio station a very happy week and a great spring coming up, and hopefully to see them there.
Well, thank you so much. It's one of the great pleasures of having a community radio station is that we get to talk with really creative and accomplished people. So it's been lots of fun to talk with you, and I feel like I took a small trip around a mental world. I really, really enjoyed speaking with you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. See you soon.
I hope to see you there.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg, and Madhu Gadia is with me.
Tabla is amazing, and when you hear it live, I find it so different than just any kind of CD. Even if you listen to it on YouTube, it's not the same until you're in the room with the tabla player.
So what he described it was as a conversation with the audience.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think part of that is the tabla kind of makes comments and waits for a response.
Yes, yes. It's just amazing. Like, I would say people must listen to it live.
Well, congratulations to the India Cultural Association for bringing this great man here and really enriching the life of our community.
Yes.
With this wonderful culture and really world-class musicians.
Yes, we are very fortunate.
And you're going to feed him well?
We're going to feed him well.
Madhu Gadia, give you the last word.
Well, we hope to see you in Ames High School Auditorium on April 9th at 4:30 p.m. And you can go to ICAIowa.org for more information. The tickets are available at Riemann Music and
the Octagon.
Also, give us a call at 515-451-4706 and talk to Amita. And we'll see you there. And we also will feed you samosa
at the
break.
Concert?
Yes.
Oh, food as well.
Food as well.
Well, lots of fun. And thank you so much, Madhu Gadia, for making life really fun in
thank
Central
you.
Iowa.
Yes.
Appreciate
it. Very, very enjoyable.
And you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Allison Walter is here from the Convention and Visitors Bureau. Welcome, Allison. Give us some information about what's coming up.
Yes, April is going to be another busy month in Ames. We've got a number of youth-based events coming to town, and I'll just kind of start out mentioning those. The Iowa Odyssey of the Mind State Finals will be taking place on Saturday, April 1st. This is the state finals for the middle school and high school students. This year, they'll be going to Michigan for the world finals. And then we also have the Iowa Future Problem Solvers, and they will hold their state finals on Friday and Saturday, April 21st and 22nd here in Ames. And we have the IT Olympics, and that is Friday and Saturday, April 21st and 22nd. And we also have the Iowa FFA Leadership Conference.
FFA is Future Farmers of America?
That is correct, yes. The high school teams will be coming and they'll be doing some leadership training as well as some competitions. And they will be in Ames for about 3 days, April 9th through the 11th. So April is a big month for youth events here.
Are these conferences open to anybody to attend?
They do have some competitions that are open to the public for people to watch. So yes, if you're interested, you can find out information on our website about the events and come and see the students performing. Yes. We've also got a number of great performances and other events. We have Annie that'll be taking place at Stevens Auditorium, and they have two shows on Saturday, April 1st. We also have shows with ISU Theater. They will be doing Little Women, the musical, and that is this first and second weekend in April. Shows on Friday and Saturday at 7:30 and Sunday at 2 o'clock. Actors is doing another show this month, and it is called Other Desert Cities, a searing family drama where secrets are currency and everyone is rich. And that will be this first and second weekend in April. They have Friday and Saturday shows at 7:30, and the second week they have Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30, and then also a 2 o'clock show on Sunday. Are you ready for football? Yes, it's the Cyclone Gridiron Club's spring football game taking place Saturday, April 8th at 1 o'clock in Jack Trice Stadium. And then that evening, they'll have Cy's House of Trivia. And this is the 11th annual House of Trivia featuring interactive trivia, Cyclone celebrities, coaches, former athletes, and other special guests. So it's lots of fun, and it takes place at Hilton Coliseum on Saturday evening at 5:30. Also Saturday, April 8th, is the ISU Fashion Show. You can experience a runway show with designs all produced by Iowa State students. We have a Ames Town and Gown String Quartet and Amara Piano Quartet. And that will be Saturday, April 8th at 7:30 at City Auditorium. We have a youth matinee taking place at Stevens Auditorium. The Boy Who Cried Wolf on Tuesday, April 11th. And there are shows at 10 and 12:30. Easter is coming up. We've got a couple of great Easter egg hunts for you. A spring egg hunt at Ryman Gardens and spring egg hunt up in Story City. Those are both happening Saturday morning, April 15th. And we also have a geocache egg hunt. You'll be able to learn how to use a GPS and go searching through the woods to find some special prizes and eggs. And that'll be out at McFarland Park on Saturday, April 15th from 10 to noon. And it's a great way to learn a little bit about geocaching, and it might be a great hobby that you want to take up. We have another great performance at Stevens Auditorium, Semitoned, on Thursday, April 20th at 6:30. And this is all-male a cappella group from the University of Exeter, the reigning champions of the Voice Festival, which is university champions for the United Kingdom. ISU Theaters also has The Tempest this month, and they will have performances April 20th through the 23rd, Thursday, Friday, Saturday evening at 7:30, and Sunday at 2 o'clock. We have the Midwest Children's Choir Festival taking place on Friday, April 21st at Stevens Auditorium. It is one of the most highly regarded youth choral festivals in Iowa, taking place right here in Ames on Friday, April 21st. You'll hear three guest youth choirs, along with more than 250 select young singers from across the state of Iowa. And you can celebrate Arbor Day out at the Iowa Arboretum. They're having a Run for the Trees on Saturday morning, April 29th. It is both a 5K and a 1 mile family run or walk. And then they'll have all kinds of celebrations of the trees with tree climbing for children and an appearance by Smokey Bear later that day at Iowa Arboretum. Also, the end of April is the opening of the Washed Ashore exhibit at Ryman Gardens. Washed Ashore will be the major annual exhibit for Ryman Gardens in 2017, and it coincides with their annual theme of water. They'll feature 10 giant sea life sculptures made from trash that's been collected from beaches and made into sculptures. And it's a great way to graphically illustrate the tragedy of plastic pollution in our oceans and our waterways. Ryman Gardens is the first public garden in the entire country to host this colorful garbage to art exhibit. It opens this weekend, April 29th and 30th, and will continue on through the summer through October. We also have the National Players bringing Grapes of Wrath to Fisher Theater, a powerful production of Steinbeck's great American novel, The Grapes of Wrath. And that's Saturday, April 29th at 7:30. And just one final note, we like to make you aware of groups that are in the community. The All Iowa Attack Organization hosts basketball tournaments every weekend in April. They've got boys and girls tournaments, including the state AAU tournament and the Midwest Festival of Basketball Teams. And they bring over 1,000 people for those tournaments each weekend to our community. So we appreciate the efforts that they put on in organizing those tournaments every weekend. So lots and lots going on in April. You can find more about these events and many other events on our website, and that is sightsofames.com, named after our favorite mascot, Cy, C-Y-T-E-S, of Ames.com. Sightsofames.com.
Thank you, Allison. Busy month. And thank you again for your really impressive rundown of events. Ames is hopping. So see you again in May, and thank you so much for stopping by.
Have a great day.
We've been speaking with Allison Walter from the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. Earlier in the program, we spoke with members of Bread for the World, Jan Barron, Roy Haugen, and Glenda Egling. We also spoke with Madhu Gadia, president of the India Cultural Association, and virtuoso world musician Zakir Hussain. Thank you to the India Cultural Association and Bashan Sanghi for their help in getting this interview for us. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Chelly. And most of the other music you heard today was by Zakir Hussain and Rahul Sharma, who will be performing with Mr. Hussain in Ames on April 9th. Remember that Local Talk is archived at khoifm.org. We are also streaming live on the web at khoifm.org. And on our homepage, you can find information and links to the things we've spoken about today, as well as a link to this audio. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio. KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.
Support for KHOI comes from ISU Theater, presenting Little Women, the musical, following four sisters as they grow from childhood to adulthood. March 31st through April 9th at Fisher Theater in Ames. Tickets and more information can be found at theater.iastate.edu.